Hello, I'm Vivienne Nunes. Welcome to Business Daily from the BBC. Coming up, we're taking a look at Zimbabwe. Following the country's historic elections, what does the future hold for this battered economy? Can the newly elected government pull Zimbabwe out of the economic doldrums?
What investors were looking for most substantially is a sense of stability, a sense of transparency. And I think events over the past weeks have shaken that confidence. Investors are going to need a lot more reassurance.
And we look at one sector with huge potential for growth, tourism.
I'm speechless. This place is very nice. It's beautiful. It's really beautiful.
That's all in Business Daily from the BBC. That's the sound of protesters taking to the streets of Harare on August 1st, 2 days after Zimbabwe held national elections. The governing ZANU-PF party had won the parliamentary rounds, but the result of the presidential poll hadn't yet been announced, and many were frustrated by the delay. Security forces opened fire on opposition supporters, and 6 civilians were killed. 2 days later, President Emmerson Mnangagwa announced he'd won 50.8% of the vote. At his press conference, he again repeated the mantra he'd been pushing since he came to power during a military-backed coup last year, that Zimbabwe is now open for business. But for foreign observers and potential investors, the elections were a litmus test to see whether Zimbabwe had moved on from the oppressive regime of former President Robert Mugabe. So what did the international community make of the violence, and what will that mean when it comes to attracting investment? Dr. Charles Laurie is head of Africa at global risk consultancy Maplecroft.
I think one has to remember that the international investment community doesn't know Emmerson Mnangagwa very well. And certainly in the run-up to the election, all eyes and ears were open to understand what his proclamation of a new Zimbabwe would actually look like. And initially, the signs were looking quite positive. Certainly on election day, the proceedings of the election were going quite smoothly. But the prospect of investors having confidence in Mnangagwa's new Zimbabwe have been severely dented by the violence that we've seen over the past weeks. It demonstrated that there are real profound questions about his ability to proclaim that Zimbabwe is a new country. I mean, these were the actions of the old government that he was looking to distance him from, and certainly not the kinds of actions you would see from a Zimbabwe that is looking to make itself attractive.
It has quietened down since then, and President Mnangagwa has spent many months since he took power saying Zimbabwe is open for business. But what proof have we seen on the ground that the business environment has changed?
I think one needs to be realistic about what Mnangagwa could have achieved in the period leading up to the election. He can build bridges, he can make promises, and in fact, his mere proclamations are an extraordinary turn around from the Mugabe regime. So what we've seen and heard is quite promising, and indeed some of his actual practical changes, for example, beginning to dismantle the indigenization laws, are positive signs for investors.
The indigenization laws being that foreign companies had to hand over 51% of their ownership to Zimbabweans.
That's correct. And what that essentially does for international investors, it makes Zimbabwe a no-go country. There are plenty of other promising countries to invest in Southern Africa. And if they're going to concede 51% of their controlling assets, they simply won't choose Zimbabwe and they'll take their investment dollars elsewhere.
That's, as you say, changed now, though. What risks remain for investors in Zimbabwe?
A fundamental risk is whether you can trust Mnangagwa's government. What investors were looking for most substantially is a sense of stability, a sense of transparency, a sense that the investment environment would no longer be as politicized as it has been over the past 2 decades. And I think events over the past weeks have shaken that confidence. Investors are going to need a lot more reassurance. They're going to need to see a lot more material demonstrations that the investment environment will not be as politicized, that the government will protect foreign investment assets.
Foreign investors are perhaps also looking to institutions like the World Bank or the IMF to see if they're going to re-establish ties with Zimbabwe. Have we had any indication from them?
There are a lot of rumblings that are positive, and I think this points to one of the most promising aspects for Zimbabwe over the coming months. Whether Mnangagwa knows it or not, he has a key ace up his sleeve, and that is the international community does not want Zimbabwe to fail. It does not want Zimbabwe to once again become a pariah state. So you will see a short memory in terms of election violence over the past few weeks, and you will see institutions like the IMF, even in governments like the United States and the British government, seeking to, wherever they can, ensure that Zimbabwe gets back on its feet. It's in the interests of Zimbabweans and the international community that the country becomes a success once again.
Dr. Charles Laurie of Maplecroft. Samir Shasha is CEO of Cambria Africa, an investment company with a number of interests in Zimbabwe, including a logistics business and a hotel.
Zimbabweans are very educated. They are extremely hardworking. They're extraordinarily resourceful. And Zimbabwe is one of the most educated countries in Africa.
I think it's far preferable to Zambia, to Mozambique, to Malawi, even to Namibia. The level of corruption is far less than, let's say, Mozambique. The level of bureaucracy is far less than Mozambique. The ease of doing business and the standards of doing business are easier. So in many ways, the business law is far more respected in Zimbabwe than many of the neighboring countries.
Samir Shasha. Zimbabwe has an abundance of natural resources, with diamonds, platinum and gold among the valuable minerals to be found there. Hugh Warner is the executive chairman of Prospect Resources, an Australian company that's built a lithium mine just outside Harare. He gave me his take on the investment climate in Zimbabwe.
I think it's attractive. It's obviously Africa, so it has the African risks. But as a small balance sheet company, we always go into countries where our balance sheet is competitive against large companies. In terms of Zimbabwe, we like it. Our experience over the last 5 years has been very positive. We found the rule of law works well. We found the government processes work well. And with the new government, we've found a tremendous change in the fact that the process is working very well, well, far better. We've heard the country's open for business, but we've really seen it in terms of work on the ground.
Give us some examples of where you've seen proof that Zimbabwe is in fact open for business.
Well, since the new government's been put in place, we've received national project status for the Arcadia Lithium Project, which gives the project a VAT exemption for importation of capital equipment to bring the mine into production. We've also been included in the Rapid Response Initiative, whereby the government identified certain mining projects and other industry projects that they see will bring a big benefit to the economy. And so they've put together a committee to help that project get into production. So we meet the government every Monday and we present the issues that we're facing and we see the different government departments to work out solutions to progress the project.
You've been there a few years in the mining sector already, but you're thinking about making a further investment.
We're looking to increase the size of our first mining operation, our lithium mine. We're at the moment resizing. We expect, subject to the final numbers, will amount to a significant increase in production and obviously increase investment in the country. But we're also looking at a number of other businesses in the country, which we will hope, if we can, subject to due diligence, actually acquire and actually expand our investment in the country.
Hugh Warner. Well, one part of the economy with significant potential for growth is the tourism sector. In many ways, it's the country's great hope for a fast flow of cash. Tourist arrivals were up 12% in 2017, but Zimbabwe ranked a lowly 114 out of 136 countries in an analysis of global tourism competitiveness carried out by the World Bank. Efforts are being made to boost tourism businesses. The Reserve Bank of Zimbabwe recently introduced a $15 million fund to support the industry. But as I found out, there's plenty of work to be done. Mosi Owa Tunya is the local word for Victoria Falls, and it means the smoke that thunders. The rising spray off this waterfall looks so thick, it's like smoke. The Zambezi River is cascading down in front of me. I'm at Devil's Cataract, which is 73 metres high. There are helicopters above me taking tourists on aerial viewings of the falls. And they're probably a little bit drier than I am because I am getting very wet indeed.
I'm speechless. This place is very nice. It's beautiful. It's really beautiful.
One satisfied sightseer from Botswana. Tourist arrivals in Zimbabwe reached nearly 2.5 million last year, with 80% of those coming from other African countries. But that's far below the 10 million tourists who visited neighbouring South Africa. In fact, when I visited Victoria Falls on a sunny Saturday afternoon, I only saw around 40 other visitors at the national park, which seemed startlingly low for an attraction listed among the 7 wonders of the natural world. So what's the local tourism industry doing to attract more business? Martin Vaughan is the hotel manager of nearby Ilala Lodge.
One of our main aims as Zimbabwe Tourism is to create Victoria Falls as a destination, not as an add-on, which it currently is. Most of the clients that are coming to us are either coming through Johannesburg or Botswana or Namibia and then coming to see us for 2 days and then flying home. We want to try and create Zimbabwe as a destination in its own right, that people are flying directly into Victoria Falls from Dubai, from Heathrow.
In 2016, the Victoria Falls International Airport underwent a huge refurbishment, paid for by Chinese state-owned companies. It now has a gleaming glass terminal and runways built for wide-body jets. But at the moment, it's underutilised, with just 8 or 9 flights arriving per day, and all of them from the African continent. For the tourists who do overcome the logistical challenges of getting to Zimbabwe, another problem awaits them when they arrive: high prices. Hotels in Zimbabwe often cost more than $150 a night. A hotel breakfast will set you back another $25. The high prices are a consequence of a severe foreign currency shortage. Business people in Zimbabwe told me they're forced to source foreign currency on the black market at a rate that's often 50% more than the official exchange rate.
I think what people don't realise is the cost of operation in Zimbabwe is quite high. You know, we import majority of our food, so we're having to source that foreign currency. There's obviously the duty implications with regards to that, so it obviously elevates our cost.
Hi, I'm Ashley from Tingu.com. Behind me is the second largest man-made lake in the world. That's Lake Kariba right here in Zimbabwe.
Ashley Musavisa is on a mission. She's hoping to harness the power of the internet to bring more tourists to her country.
I think that travel in Africa is not as accessible as it should be, and it goes back to the issues of, you know, hotel pricing being so high, right? It's because there aren't many options, and even if there are more options, you don't know about them and you wouldn't know where to start looking. And so my goal is to try and create a platform where you're able to access all the options available to you. And by having more information publicly available, it makes the pricing more competitive.
So what's your plan to get this company off the ground?
Well, for starters, finding out everything there is to do in the country, and then creating a platform where people can find out what these things are, book trips to these places, and really just make it a little bit more competitive for everyone.
And you've had a lot of experience of the tourist attractions here in Zimbabwe. What would you recommend people go and see, apart from Victoria Falls, which they might already know about?
There's the Manor Pools, which is a national heritage site, great for game viewing, canoe safaris. There's Wange National Park, which has probably the best game viewing in the country. Gonarezho in the Low Veld has amazing cliffs, great scenery and wildlife. The Eastern Highlands should actually be the adventure capital of Zimbabwe, in my opinion. Stunning scenery, amazing activities, and it's a lot more reasonable than the Victoria Falls.
More tourists coming into the country is something stone sculptors Mayor and Lloyd Savanu would welcome. I meet the father and son team in their outdoor sculpture gallery, not far from the Victoria Falls, where abstract shapes, animals and faces stand tall on the grass, almost like giant chess figures, all carved from smooth black and white stone. Stone carving is a craft which can be traced back to Great Zimbabwe, the historic civilization that existed in what is now modern-day Zimbabwe from the 11th to 15th centuries.
So at that site, some sculptures were discovered there. So it is a kind of art that has been done by our forefathers for quite a long time up to now.
It's not easy to make a living in the arts in Zimbabwe today. Lloyd and Mayor face the added challenge of their heavy sculptures being damaged by animals, which wander into the gallery at night.
Now I'm fixing a minor damage which was caused by wild animals. Because here we have problems of animals. Sometimes elephants, sometimes baboons, and even warthogs, they pass through this garden and they knock down the sculptures. So when they are damaged, we repair them the way I'm doing this one.
Mayor Sun Lloyd tells me the disappointing tourist figures mean sales are hard to come by.
Business is slow. It's not that much at peak. And it depends with the flow of tourists within the country. If we have more tourists, the chances of us having a lot of business is at its maximum. But when tourism is down, that means there are no chances of trading our arts.
Stone sculptor Lloyd Savanu. So Zimbabwe is at a crossroads. The country is ripe for investment. But what does President Mnangagwa and his government need to do to convince the international community that Zimbabwe is a safe bet? Here's Dr. Charles Laurie from Maplecroft again.
One of the first key steps he can take is to extend an olive branch to the opposition. The international community doesn't want Zimbabwe to be as deeply politicized as it has been. And by including key opposition members in his new cabinet, by ensuring that key opposition members take up posts throughout his government, he can send a clear signal to the international governments that Zimbabwe is different from what it used to be. What individuals are looking to see is that this is not a government that's run by the ruling ZANU-PF party, that it's a government that is run by the laws of the state.
I suppose the sense I got when I was in Zimbabwe is that it's a very sad country and that there is so much potential. There's a lot of people who are unemployed or underemployed selling things on the street. There is a lot of potential, though, if they were to go into new jobs, if there was better business development. Is that the sense you have?
It's most certainly the sense. It's one of the frustrations, one of the tragedies, but one of the points where individuals can get excited as well. This is local Zimbabweans, the international investment community as well. There's tremendous potential. You have a relatively highly educated population. Infrastructure is not great, but it's certainly sufficient for many businesses to take off. What the country needs is good leadership, and that's what Mnangagwa is going to need to demonstrate very substantially.
Dr. Charles Laurie. That's the end of this edition of Business Daily. If you'd like to let me know your thoughts on the program, I'm @VivNunes on Twitter. Business Daily is back at the same time tomorrow.